Next time you fly on business, arrive feeling fresh in Emirates Business Class. On your flight, you can sink into leather seats that recline flat for a better sleep. You can enjoy delicious regional meals and premium drinks. And there's onboard Wi-Fi if you need to work. Along with Emirates chauffeur-driven airport transfers and entry to the luxurious Emirates Lounge, it's just a better way to do business. Book now on Emirates.com.
Hitting rock bottom. That's today's episode. Let's dive into it. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Now, welcome to the Investing in Real Estate show. And thanks, Freedom Fighters, for dialing us in. This is the show where we talk about building passive income, financial freedom for you and your family. And the vehicle that we use to get there is buy and hold real estate. Buying real estate with the idea of holding it for the rest of your life, even transferring it down to your children when you pass on. And there's all sorts of creative ways to really to do all of these things. And so that's what we talk about here on the show. Is that right?
That is what we talk about. And we have started the year by sort of retelling, or maybe even telling for the first time, our story as real estate investors, because we figured we might get some new listeners, new followers to either Clayton or myself. And we thought, well, some people might think, how did these people even do this? How did they get to this place in their lives? Because neither of us have a day job. We're bums, right? Like both of us are wearing sweatpants and it's Tuesday at noon, right?
Right. And we're in
the office. Are you even wearing any pants?
I'm pantsless, baby. I'm not going to do this show with pants on. Exactly right. And so, you know, it's very easy for people to, like, you know, you listen to like Oprah's show or something like that. And you'll be like, yeah, it's easy for Oprah to say it, or it's easy for that guy to say it. But look, we hit rock bottom. And if you listen to the first two episodes where we started talking about our story, sort of my real estate journey in the beginning, Natalie's real estate journey, and then this episode where we're going to talk about hitting rock bottom, I mean, we were there. And to the point where we didn't even have any credit. We didn't have the ability to actually even get a loan on anything. And we had to get incredibly creative about what we were going to do with real estate investing and turning our lives around. So, you know, everyone's version of sort of hitting rock bottom is different, and you may be experiencing that right now, or it may have been something in your past that maybe 2 years ago, and now you're slowly starting to dig your way out of it. Or sadly, maybe you haven't hit rock bottom yet. And honestly, I think that's a very good lesson for children to learn. You know, that's why children of like rock stars and celebrities who have everything handed to them, they don't know how to advance in life because they've never actually gone through a huge amount of adversity. They've never faced a big challenge. And challenges are what make heroes, right? Challenges are the ultimate thing that sort of solidifies your ability to grow as a human being. That's what we're put on this earth to do.
Right, exactly right. So if you listen to the first episode in this series or you watched it, you'll realize that Clayton had this big tumultuous, like a lot of losses when it comes to real estate investment. He had no mentors. He just tried on his own a couple of ventures that cost him a lot of money, right? Flips and speculative investments, and it wrecked his credit. And it soured him on investing in real estate for actually not for very long. If you really think about the time from which you like had your credit frozen and the time you reinvested, it probably was only like 4 years. I want to say you got right back in the ring. So it didn't sour you for too long, but it was a pretty ugly hit. I had an investment that was not speculative, but it was in an A-class neighborhood in an A-class city. It was the San Francisco high-rise, and it was really, really hard to make money. In fact, I lost money pretty much year over year. And so I was not completely bought into the fact that you could live as a real estate investor. I just felt like it was too hard to do. And then we got married, and we sort of both had these sort of separate ideas about it, but we're going to talk about how we shifted our mindset when we got married to becoming a family that really focused on passive income. Because when we started our family, we both had six-figure salaries. Clayton pointed out that his was much higher than mine in previous episodes. But we thought we would just live our lives on salaries, right? Paychecks, other people's companies paying us every week, month, right? You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, that's what everyone's trained to believe, right? And if you've listened to our show for any length of time, you know that we've been lied to, right? The whole way in which we've been taught growing up from our parents, high school, college, is all centered around this idea of you work for somebody else, you work for a paycheck, you build a little bit of wealth, you put money away in a 401k, and then you retire. The average, yeah. You know, and that's what we've been told. And so it's not uncommon for us to think that that's how you build wealth. You've got to go out and get a job. You've got to get benefits from that company, health benefits and other things. Otherwise, my God, you're going to be out on your own. Holy smokes. What's that going to look like? Right? It's scary. It's terrifying. But in fact, it may be the opposite. The idea of doing this on your own is not as terrifying as actually being a slave to somebody else's company. Because what happens when they decide to fire you or
right.
reduce their workforce and you're out of a job?
Yeah.
Or relocate, right?
Well, so one of the turning points for me that I was thinking about is when I lost my job and you were maybe only 2 or 3 years out of losing your job, right?
In Philadelphia.
You lost right? your job in Philadelphia and you felt very secure in that job. You had a contract. You had bought a house there. You thought that you were going to be there for a while and the rug was pulled out from under you. And they were like, we don't like you anymore. We like this guy better. And so you were just out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell a little bit about that. So I was at, I was at a Fox affiliate in Philadelphia called Fox 29. And I was, they brought me in to be like the fun morning show guy. You know, I had experience on like Good Day LA, fun morning shows and so forth. So their goal was to make Good Day Philadelphia fun again. So I get hired and then I move there. They encourage me. They're like, you're going to be here for a long time. Buy a house. So I bought a condo in downtown Philadelphia. I walk to work past Independence Hall, down Market Street, you know, past the Liberty Bell and the whole thing. And it was kind of magical, you know, and I was excited to be back home in Philadelphia and to be in that experience. It was great. Well, a week after I got there, the news director that hired me, who hired me to have fun on the show, she was fired. So poor Holly was gone, fired. They brought in this other guy who didn't like fun. He was like, had no sense of humor at all. He just wanted like, you know, at the start of every new newscast to be like, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, murder, murder, murder. This is a house right. fire murder. I was like, God, I'm going to kill my own self. This is brutal. I don't want to do this every morning. And so about 9 months into this journey, when my contract option renewal window was up, I thought, oh, it'll be no brainer. Like, well, they'll renew my contract, right? And they came to me and said, we think you were sold a bill of goods. You were brought here under different circumstances, and now we want to go in this direction. We're not going to renew your contract. And I was like, oh. And it felt like someone shoved a knife in my stomach. And it really felt like I had the wind knocked out of me because I had this house.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I'm sure a lot of people have been downsized or outsized or what have you. But in the news business, it's especially personal because it's like we just don't like the look of you or the way you speak. And we want someone else to do this better than you. And yeah, it's really tough.
Right.
It's
we're just going to bring in a generic news guy. I mean, like if you looked up news guy in the dictionary with like a jaw and, you know, that's what you would get. So that's what they brought
like
in.
Like Guy Smiley on Sesame Street.
Right, like John Rockway or something like that. You know, like one of those types of guys, right? And so
you are that kind of guy.
I am not that kind of guy.
You fit the suit so well.
But
I'm
kind of a jackass, right? I'm not just like in other news tonight. Let's turn now to our weather guy with an
you're
update.
You're not built for that,
right? I can't handle that crap.
But and you got so, the look, honey. That's you know that.
Here's a little side note. You know, I can't
you got
stand
the look.
In local news, like the fake weather toss in local news. Mm-hmm. Watch this. I can't stand it. Right. It's time to get to the weather person with the weather update. And they always have to throw in like, oh, Janice, thanks for bringing us this cold front on your return from vacation. That's the kind of crap I can't stand. Right. So that's I can't do that stuff. And I can't even feign interest in doing that kind of crap. So anyway, it was I lost my job. And so many people experience this. Who cares about me and TV? But I just was like out of a job, out of a contract. I have a mortgage now. I'm paying this mortgage on this property. What am I going to do? And I vowed then when that happened and I walked home that day and I said, and it was like a fall afternoon and I was walking home and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I just was kind of circling through Independence Hall and walking through the different courtyards and things. And I was like, you know, I am never going to have this happen to me again. No one is ever going to dictate to me my future. And I didn't know then really how it was going to come together, how I was going to put this piece together and make this happen so that no one could ever do this to me again. I'm not going to work for somebody else where they can then pull the rug out from under me and then I'm out of a job.
But then you did go get another job. You did get a paycheck job after that.
Yeah. And, you know, I was at the time like, okay, I'm not ready. I didn't know quite how to go out on my own, but I just knew that I needed to build something for myself. And there was a lot of crazy exploits at the time. Like I tried, if you've heard us on the podcast, I tried all manner of shiny objects, right? I was like, I'm going to start my own company. I'm going to start my own zip up hoodie company. I'm going to become a media consultant. Like I had a media consultancy business where I would work with sort of like young reporters and teach them how to, you know, prepare for camera and all that kind of stuff. So I was trying all these different things, but I knew that I needed something. I knew I needed my own safety net as an entrepreneur. I just didn't know exactly what it was. And I guess, you know, it took me a long time to understand that being a real estate investor, you are an entrepreneur. You are a business owner. As a business owner, then you have complete control of your destiny, your future. Today's episode is brought to you by Betterment. It's the largest independent online financial advisor, and it's the service designed to help improve customers' long-term returns and lower taxes for retirement planning, building wealth, and other financial goals. We're talking about financial goals, right, on this today's episode, of course, so this is incredibly important. Betterment takes advantage of investment strategies and then uses the technology to deliver them to more than 300,000 customers. So why would I choose Betterment? Well, experts who have your back. And we believe you should be able to get financial advice anytime, anywhere. All Betterment customers can receive advice from the team of licensed financial experts through their mobile app's messaging feature. Betterment is a fiduciary. That means that they don't get commissions for recommending funds. Like if you want to have some of your money in some different funds in, you know, for a diversified portfolio, they don't make money off of that. And they don't have funds of their own that they try to cram down your throat. They do what they believe is right for you. Another reason I you know, these guys are great is they have low transparent advisory fees. So what that means is they only have a 0.25% annual fee. You've heard us talk about on the podcast all of those hidden fees that ends up, you know, you're paying financial advisors different. Different here with Betterment. So you know what you're getting up front. It's not hidden. It's transparent. And they have tax saving strategies to help increase your after-tax returns. So everything they do is designed to lower taxes, increase your returns. On average, Betterment's tax coordinated portfolio can increase portfolio value by an estimated 15% over 30 years. And they've got great advice too that looks at all of your wealth. So if you've got real estate investing, which I hope you do, and you've got some money and some funds, Betterment can give you a clear view of your net worth. And when you sync your outside accounts, such as, you know, your Bank of America account or your Wells Fargo account, all of that stuff, and your other investments like your real estate investing, all tied under one roof, then Betterment can show you how much of your outside brokerage accounts may be costing you in fees. That's what we did. I mean, we found out that we had so many fees in these other brokerage accounts. And we, of course, stopped them immediately. We had to reposition our money and pull money out, but we didn't realize how much in fees we were paying. That's why technology has helped making it, you know, investing so much easier and better. And that's the beauty of Betterment. Here, you have to do this. Investing in real estate listeners can get up to 1 year managed free, totally free. For more information, visit betterment.com/Clayton. That's betterment.com/Clayton. It's BETTERMENT. Betterment.com/Clayton. I would love to use Betterment if I could, but since Betterment is a sponsor of the show, I'm not able to because of SEC regulations, unfortunately. Betterment can help you strive for higher returns. That's their goal. And it's a smarter, cheaper, more efficient way to invest. Check them out today and use that coupon code betterment.com/Clayton.
And so when we met, Clayton got this next awesome job. He went from local news in Philadelphia to network news in New York City at Fox News. But it stayed with you. You could tell that Clayton was always really felt like, oh, I just really need to cling on to this job. It's what keeps me safe, right? And I felt pretty secure in my job. I had been moved from San Francisco to New York City to work for CNET. And then CBS bought CNET. And then I became like the tech person for CBS News, specifically the early show. So we both had paycheck jobs, but Yeah, I do want to say that Clayton, a lot of people ask me, how did your husband learn to invest in real estate when he's got this full-time job? And I said, well, he works weekends. So because you worked the weekends, you spent almost every waking minute during the week, not playing PlayStation and, you know, growing a beard, but trying to learn what was the right thing for you to find passive income.
Right. I can't just sit around and play Xbox and sit around and play PlayStation. Like I was hired by Fox to be the weekend anchor, right? That means I was there on a Thursday and Friday and a Saturday and a Sunday. And sometimes not even Thursday. I'd be there on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then I had the rest of the week to really, I don't know, wander, right? And kind of figure things out.
Yeah.
You know, they would call me and say, hey, can you anchor on Monday? So I was always like there and available, and they needed me, and I was sort of the utility guy. But my job was Saturday and Sunday. And my boss was, hey, we are hiring you for, you're going to have the longest show on television. It's 4 hours. It's a marathon. 6 to 10 a.m. is when you're on the air. So, you know, it's a great job. And I remember there was a local company, actually CNET used to have a podcast called the 404. And I was a guest on their. I was a guest on their podcast.
I'm familiar.
Jeff Bacalar, and who were the other hosts? Jeff and
Wilson and Justin. Right.
They had me as a guest, but they told you at one point. They said, "Man, if I was that guy, all week I just would be sitting around in my underwear playing Xbox."
That's what he said, and scratching himself was
scratching Jeff myself Bacalar. And sitting around and watching Xbox, playing Xbox. And did I ever do that?
No, Clayton. You know, no moss grows on that stone. So he has always spent all of his waking hours trying to figure out how he can become an entrepreneur and secure his own future. I think that's what I would go off to work Monday through Friday and I would leave you behind. And I knew that's what Clayton's going to be up to. He's going to be on Starbucks, sending some people some email, coming up with some ideas, writing down a new thing. Even before real estate was your thing, he was always up to something. You can always believe that Clayton's up to no good. So
up to goodness.
Right. He's up to good. But as the saying goes, that boy, he's up to something. So then we had our first child and I lost my job. And that I think maybe I wasn't as empathetic before to you losing your job. I knew that it really upset you and that it was an informative moment in your life. But until it happened to me, I didn't realize how much it can throw your ego. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how much I had valued myself based on that paycheck. And, losing my job was, I guess there's a name for it. I call it now my Me Too moment. You know, I had to leave over circumstances that weren't under my control. And in hindsight, it was great for me because it forced me to become the owner of my brand. Whereas before I felt like, oh, I just work for the company and I do what they tell me to and they promote my stuff and that's how my brand grows. But it really pushed me to see what I could do outside of the confines of a network. And I'm exceedingly grateful for that. But I remember sitting home at my desk and waiting for my agent to send me an update about this network or that network. I met with CNN. I met with ABC. I met with all these other places. And just nothing was really happening because I wasn't willing to take a full-time job now that we had a child. And we were sort of prioritizing your career because, as you've said many times, you made more money. Mm-hmm. So we felt like, okay, this is the money we live off of. I'll try and find a job too. But you work the weekends. That's how we sort of schedule our family. So for me to then take a 9-to-5 job during the week meant that everyone was working every day of the week. We had no family time. It just was rough for us. So I never accepted a full-time job even when they were offered. So I was waiting for these part-time gigs to fit into my life and it really wasn't happening. So when my paycheck dried up, I remembered sitting there one day and thinking, okay, if I'm not going to bring in a paycheck, I'm going to become really good with the money that we do have. Either the investments we've got now or the money that Clayton makes, I'm going to become really good at investing it. I never said to myself, to my credit, I never said I'm going to become great at budgeting. I wasn't down with that. Like, okay, we'll shrink our living, right? I felt like we could still live the life that we had planned to live, that we were living, but I would help by becoming really good with our money. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And that's really the genesis of this whole thing was, okay, how can we be better stewards of our money? Because, you know, you and I were still dealing with, and we'll talk about this in the next episode, which is that sort of transition into passive income, examining these properties and what we're going to be doing with it in the future. But at the time, we were looking at this saying, okay, we can't pay our mortgage right now. Like, we have some problems here. Like, we can't even pay our mortgage. We're not – where's our money going? We need to get right with this if we're going to take this seriously. And I think it, also we were examining some things that I had invested in. I had invested in some weird life insurance policy at some point.
Yeah, it's a really expensive life insurance policy.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, there was we had to walk that back. You know, we had to learn about this kind of stuff and figure all this out. So there was some big moments for us to sort of get real about finances and say, all right, we need to take this seriously. We need to increase our financial education. You even read a book on ETFs at one point.
That's sort of where I started. I mean, I just went to the library with my library card and I was like, I'm going to pick up the first personal finance book that jumps out at me and I will learn one thing at a time. And then I just sort of followed the trail of breadcrumbs, kind of like Hansel and Gretel, because that led to the next thing, which led to the next thing, which led to the next thing. But where we started was that I sat down and made us a balance sheet. So I tried to figure out what we owned versus what we owed. We've talked about the balance sheet so many times on this show, and I'm a real believer that you can only build wealth with your own balance sheet. And I had done this since I was 12 because my father made me do it as a child, but I had never done it for us as a family. I was really prideful about combining our money. I didn't want to do that until I had to, because I was like, no, I've got my own stuff. You know, I really didn't. I remember approaching you and I was like, I don't have money in my account anymore because I'm not making money. I think we should, you know, only have one joint account. And I remember thinking, I don't know what I thought you would say, but I was really afraid. And you were like, okay. And you walked out of the room. I was like, that was really hard. So I made us a balance sheet. I figured out what we had to work with. And then I was like, okay, I'll take one thing at a time. And that's how I always tell people to start building wealth, is make your balance sheet, see what you've got, and choose one line, either in your assets or your liabilities column, and learn how to exploit that line. Like, do the best you can with whatever's in that line. And then that will take you to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So it wasn't like I decided to do, you know, be good at personal finance. And then I was like, we're going to self-direct our IRAs and buy real estate inside of them. These were mostly your ideas. But then I would have to go to the balance sheet and say, how can we make that work? Now, most of the ideas for building wealth, I'm going to throw that credit to you. Clayton would be mowing the lawn with podcast in his ear and then come in and say, we've got to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a lot of what you taught yourself about passive income came from podcasts, which is one of the reasons we wanted to do this, is help other people find what you found.
Yeah. And, you know, it went back to, got back to basics, really, you know, which was, okay, I understand that real estate is the number one way to build wealth in this country. But how do you do it? You know, how do you do it if you don't have any credit and you have to get creative, and do you just call up a realtor and find a property? And no, do you buy properties in San Francisco? Do you buy properties in Philadelphia? Right. Where do you do this? How do you do this? You know, and I knew that, you know, millionaires were being made by real estate investing, and you didn't even know their names. Like, these were savvy individuals. These were people who, you know, you wouldn't even know them from Adam, right? They were just, they had invested wisely. They own a bunch of properties that cash flow. They travel with their spouse and you don't know their name. They're not flashy. They're not Warren Buffett. You know, they're not Grant Cardone. They're not all these different people out there. And so how do you do it? And I was just really self-educating, reading books. We reread, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I think that really set us on a great path, like rereading that book, understanding that, you know, people do not have the financial education in this country, and understanding that purchasing assets that are going to create cash flow, that's the key. And that actually having cash in your bank account is a problem, right? Actually having a lot of cash on hand is not good. Cash can be actually detrimental. So how do you take that cash that you've got in your existing accounts and start to put that to work for you so that it's creating cash flow? I also remember...
What do you remember?
Well, I also remember reading The 4-Hour Workweek. And I remember in Tim Ferriss's book, he talks about, you know, this story stuck with me and it's a great story. And I think it informed maybe more than anything else, like this idea of wanting to live for the now instead of when I'm 70. Mm-hmm. He talks about in that book, you know, that they saw a guy who like worked his whole life. He got like a really nice car by the time he retired, you know, and then he was like 70 and he retired. And then he literally like had a heart attack the next year and he couldn't enjoy any of the stuff that he wanted to enjoy because he worked so hard, saved for retirement. Then he retires and he drops dead a year later.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he talks about having that commitment to want to live for the now. And why shouldn't you be able to live the life that you want in your 40s and your 30s and your 50s and travel and climb Machu Picchu? Because when you're 70, you're 70, your knees aren't going to work and you're not going to be able to climb Machu Picchu.
So, well, that's a limiting belief because my knees are going to work when I'm 70.
Well, I hope so. Mine will too. But my point is that that's what people do. That's what people mostly focus on. And so this paradigm shifting thought from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 4-hour work week, it's like taking that money now, having it work for you where it's producing income every month in the form of a tenant in your property. That's how you create real wealth.
Right. Yeah. And so we started building wealth with our stock accounts. We just became better stewards of what our stock accounts were invested in, either our 401k or our money market accounts or our IRAs. And we hired a fiduciary to help us choose better exchange traded funds, make sure we were paying fewer fees inside of our funds. So we became really good with just our assets inside the stock market. And then we were able to say, like, how can we contribute more to this 529, that IRA? We're going to do that with this, right? So we became pretty well versed in finance, especially for just sort of self-taught people. And I don't know how it came up, but we really were thinking about how to make our money work for us, turn our money into performing assets. And inside the stock market, it's really hard to live off of dividends or, you know, it's very, very expensive and it's hard to invest enough that you're actually just living off of your performing assets inside the stock market. So we were thinking about turning our assets into performing assets. I had read a few books. And we brought back up Rich Dad, Poor Dad, again, the book. Now, both of us had been familiar with the book. You had read it. I had read it. My dad likes to give it out for gifts to people. But it wasn't like top of mind. It wasn't, I don't know why. It just wasn't something. We weren't speaking that language completely yet.
Right.
So we used to drive to our house in the mountains. It takes about 2 hours. And our children would always sleep. They were tiny enough that they slept the whole way there and back. And so you said, I remember, you're like, why don't you read it out loud to me while we drive? I don't know why we didn't just get the audiobook. It would have made me a lot less car sick, but I read it out loud. But it was good because we'd read something and we'd be like, why haven't we been thinking like this? Right. And it really sort of lit our hair on fire. And that's how Clayton then started to invest in, or started to listen to real estate podcasts. And so he would, like I said, be mowing the lawn and come in and be like, I'm going to change all our IRAs over into self-directed IRAs and then, you know, borrow from my 401k. And I was like, what? We've talked about many times how we work together as Clayton comes in with his hair on fire about some crazy idea. And I'm always like, no. And then I'll look it up and sort of get on board slowly but surely. I don't think I resist quite as much anymore. Now no. I'm like, okay, let me learn this thing.
Now you know to listen. Now you know.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a blind sheep follower of yours, but I hear what you're saying and I'm like, okay, I'll look into that. Right.
Right.
I don't say no first. I don't get scared. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I used to get so scared when Clayton said, I have an idea.
But now look at us.
Right.
My ideas.
I still get a little
passive income. That's all right. But you know, you should, this brings up a couple of key points, right? You know, if you hit rock bottom, it's going to be okay. You're not going to improve yourself unless you're challenging yourself. So unless you're doing something that's uncomfortable, if you're going to continue to do things that are just comfortable in your life, you're never going to succeed, right? You're never going to be pushing out of your comfort zone and pushing through and being successful. So whether or not, like, maybe that's even just buying your first rental property, right? I always say, think about it when you have 50, right? And it's funny, if you talk to an investor who has one rental property, put them in a room next to somebody who's got 100. It's like two different worlds colliding, right? Because that first person, if they're nervous, Nelly, they're nervous about that first rent check. They're nervous about that insurance payment. They're nervous the first time that the city sends them a letter about a sidewalk that needs being repaired. They get nervous. Someone who's got 100 properties, they don't get nervous about that stuff at all. And now they're thinking about how can I take things to the next level, right? That person with 100 properties is now thinking, okay, I'm comfortable with 100 properties. How can I make myself uncomfortable again? How can I really stretch outside my comfort zone? So it's all about growing, and each of these pieces leads you to that growth. So that's another key takeaway, is that just push yourself out of your comfort zone. And the third key takeaway from this episode is when Natalie would say, I'd get all these different ideas and all this sort of stuff. We didn't really have it down to a science yet. And so we were trying and practicing a lot of different things. We were trying, okay, I'm going to buy a rental property with my 401k. Should we set up an LLC? Now we've got it down to a science. And if you listen to this show, I think we've got it really down to a really good science on how to acquire and buy, you know, rental properties. But don't get so caught up in the shoot first, ask questions later. Or what is it? Shoot first, aim later.
I don't know.
Shoot first, aim later.
You're asking the wrong person.
Well, I mean, because you've got to pull that back. So it's okay to test these things. It's okay to go down these rabbit holes. But if you're doing 100 rabbit holes, you're never going to have success. You've got to find a system that works for you.
You can't
invest in billboards and mobile home parks and do flips, and you're going to buy 100 unit apartment complexes and single families, and you're going to also invest in X, Y, and Z. You've got to stick with one course in the beginning and see it through until you have success, and then take that next step.
Right. And there are two paradigm shifts that I think that really, really helped us. The first one is, like my father likes to say, buying geese instead of eggs. So we looked at everything in our asset column and realized these things do not perform. We actually can't live off of them month to month, right? That even a stock-based account is only growing so, you know, incremental to get to a certain place someday that will take it all out in one lump sum. That's a pile of cash, not a stream of cash. So we had to change our mindset to trying to take our dollars and put them into performing assets, something that pays you on a regular basis that you can live off of. So that was really important. And then I said there's a second thing, but I don't remember what it was. I had something really exciting in mind, but while you were talking, I forgot about it. I'm sure it will come to me when we stop the podcast.
I'm sure. Well, we can do it in the next episode. So this today is all about hitting rock bottom.
Oh, I remember.
Oh,
okay.
Good. Thank goodness.
So one of the main points I really want you to take home if you're listening or viewing this is that we did it our way based on the resources we have. You can't copy someone else's path to wealth. You can only create it in your own way with your own assets and your own skills and your own know-how and your own team of people, right? And so that's why we do this, is so that people see how we did it. But we never say you should do exactly what we did. We're saying we approached this with a lot of know-how and research and creativity and help. And you should do that too. We just want to be in your corner to help inspire you to do it your way. But there's so many ways to get to wealth. You just have to look at what you've got in your balance sheet and start to do one thing, learn one thing, and that will take you to the next thing.
Right. Absolutely.
That's my brilliant point. I told you it was exciting. It's worth waiting for.
That is exciting. So in the next episode, what are we going to talk about?
All right. The next episode, we're going to talk about how we came up with a plan, how we evaluated our balance sheet and looked to figure out how each thing was performing and started to buy then real estate, how we came to learn to do that. And then the next episode, we'll talk about like the kind of things that we're up to now, because now I feel like we're pretty experienced investors. We spend a lot of our time now thinking about how to keep our money and not give all of it to the government. And so that's fun. But now we do the fun stuff, right? We actually like we learn the circus tricks.
That's right. So that'll be on the next episode. So thank you so much, guys, for listening in and through our pain and suffering and hitting rock bottom. Now, all I want you to do is just go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. And if you're not already a subscriber, please be a subscriber and share this with someone you know and love and your family that you think could use this little push to start fixing their life, fixing their finances. That's what our goal is on this show for 2018, is to help and serve and to help you guys grow as much as we can. So go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time, everyone. Bye.